cold and silent, that we don't dare speak. There's a wall between us and a river so deep. We keep pretending that there's nothing wrong. There's a cold of silence and it can't go on.
Hi, I'm Alan Watts, and this is Cutting Through the Matrix on March 26, 2010. For the newcomers out there, if you go into cuttingthroughthematrix.com website, bookmark all the other sites, you'll see I have up on the front page, because once in a while the com goes down, there's too many folk going into it one time, and this way you'll be able to get the latest shows for download for free from these alternate sites. Now, these are the official sites, cuttingthroughthematrix.com, .org, .net, .us, .ca. There's Alan Watt, cuttingthroughthematrix.ca, and there's also cuttingthrough.jagnus.com, plus Alan Watt Sentient Sentinel.eu. The last one is a European site, has all the audios, as the rest do, for download, but it's an addition of transcripts of a lot of the talks I've given in the past, and you can choose from the various languages of Europe, download them, print them up, and pass them around to your friends. Now, from the U.S., to Canada, remember, if you want to order the books and discs I have for sale at cuttingthroughthematrix.com, you can use a personal check to Canada. You can also use an international postal money order, which is from your post office, and if you don't like to go through the bank, but I stress international, don't walk out with a green one, that's internal use only. And you can also use MoneyGram, Western Union Cash, or PayPal. Now, there's a donation button or donate button for PayPal on the sites. You can use that for buying as well. Just send a separate email with the order along with the donation from PayPal and I'll get it out to you. Same across the rest of the world. PayPal, MoneyGram, Cash, or Western Union all work pretty fine. And Cash does get through, by the way. So I've heard. Anyway, for those who get the disc burned and passed to them, who don't like to use the computers, they play them on CD players, you can get in touch with me at Alan Watt, Site 41, Box 4, Estaire, Ontario, Canada. Estaire is E-S-T-A-I-R-E, Ontario, Canada. Postal code is P for Peter, the number 3, E for Elizabeth, the number 4, N for Nora, and the number 1, P3E4N1. Now, that's that out of the way, but I really do need you to help me because most folk listen all the time. I never think about sending a couple of pennies this way, even though they're paying for other people's archives to get into archives. All my stuff's free, and they'll expect everyone else to do the paying for it. That's an unfortunate statement about humanity today, when they think everything is free. Most things that are free out there, believe you me, are not for your own benefits. It's to put a spin on something, or to monitor you, or something like that. That's how things really do work in this day and age. You should know that by now. We've all supposedly grown up, although some people never ever do. I've talked before about cause and effects in society and our lives too. For everything we do, every action that we do, there's an equal and opposite reaction. That's an old dictum, which is very, very, very true. And we have spent so long creating cultures. Cultures take an awful long time to create, organize, and work themselves out with conflicts until you have a fairly standardized culture. But in this day and age, of course, the Western cultures are supposed to simply bow down and eventually fall down in front of the world's cultures because that's the intention. We're supposed to all blend in with the New World Order as the Far East and other countries are brought up to be more dominant as industrialists. And the United Nations has said that we cannot allow ourselves to be offended anymore. So in other words, anything that used to offend you through culture is not allowed. You're not allowed to be offended by other cultures, no matter what else they do. They, on the other hand, can be offended by whatever you do, and they found that out in Britain. We'll be back with more after this break.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Hi, folks. This is Alan Watt. We're cutting through the matrix. Just mentioning about how the big United Nations plan that was really hatched in London by the bankers who set it up and run it through the Milner Group that became the Royal Institute for International Affairs, CFR, how they basically knew they'd have to destroy the Western cultures and their values over a period of time. And so they went together and got set on a cultural war that really started during World War II and really escalated afterwards down to debasement. And they said themselves they would use communists and various other groups. They didn't care, in fact, according to Professor Carl Quigley, who they recruited. They could use all the causes. The more causes, the better, because you have radical groups that will then take cash from you and you can direct them. And all of the groups that wanted a sort of world society, a social society, were promoted. But they also wanted to use Karl Marx's ideas too and destroy the family units, religion, of course, and even separate the generations from each other. And that's been very well accomplished. And then with the Royal Institute of International Affairs annual meetings, if you go into their old books from the 30s, for instance, you'll find that they talked about setting up a sort of free trade zone, but not just a free trade zone, free flow of workers that were needed, that is, in the countries that signed on to the British Commonwealth that became the nucleus for the world order that we're in today. That's what they used as a basis for it. And the United Nations agrees about that, that the British Commonwealth was the nucleus and the ideal model to base it on. And at that time, they didn't want so many coming in from India, for instance, into Britain, and the ambassadors from India were complaining about that. How can you have this free flow of goods and trade and people that exclude India? But they were told their time would come, and it certainly did in the 70s, 80s and 90s, and Margaret Thatcher even admitted the reason it opened the floodgates of immigration to a country that was massively underemployed. Was that they didn't have enough children getting born from the native Britons to pay off the national debt. So we exist really. We exist really as economic units to serve the big banking boys and their systems. But it went further and further and further, as it was known to do, until you have many mayors of big cities in England who were not born there, and often Christmas is banned, things like that is all banned. Anything to do with the old culture is simply verboten, and you get fined for putting up Christmas things in stores and so on at Christmas time. That's how ridiculous it all becomes. And what's even more so is the propaganda campaign that goes on at the people back home to bow down. Just keep bowing down and get on your knees and show off your behind and just take it. That's basically what you're told to do over and over again, because in a new world order, it's supposed to be multicultural, but preferences given to those who come in from the other countries. Preferences definitely given to them because they want those countries on board with the new world order, and therefore their cultures must be allowed to expand as yours decline. And eventually theirs gets knocked on the head as well, because corruption sets in and the lure of money is so great that all values, even their own religious values, go down the tubes. Eventually, that's really the New World Order's idea of a new culture. It's a dog-eat-dog system, really. But when you start up a national health service, and I've mentioned this before, Marx talked about this kind of ideas, and it's brought into more concretized form by Lenin, who said in the West, services would be offered to the public, health services, police services, and so on, that one day would become authorities, and they'd manage the people. Well, you see, a health service managed through government, obviously, is run by for political reasons. And it's also true that whenever the IMF comes in, as it has already in Britain, they always slash and burn the easiest things, which are pension plans and your health service. But what they do mandate as a priority is abortion, fast abortion, and fast vasectomy, fast tubal ligations for women. because they want a depopulation agenda to go underway. That's really what they're using it for now. If you have something seriously wrong with you, good luck to you. You might wait for months, maybe a year, and possibly you'll be dead by that time. It got so bad over there, and I mentioned about a video before that was put up by, I think it was Channel 4, about how bad the National Health Service had become with its slash-and-burn policies, where the government was dictating to get more beds open, and so the CEOs of the hospitals got very ingenious and simply put trolleys in the corridors, took off the wheels. Now they were stationary, they called them beds. But they also sent out flyers to all those awaiting surgeries, you know, important surgeries. And they asked them on the flyer questionnaires, when will you be taking your holidays? And of course folk thought, well, they want to know so they don't send it then when we're on holiday. Well, the idea was, yes, that's when they would send it. And that's when they did send them to thousands of people who were on holiday at the time. And so they went back to the bottom of the waiting list. That's how they go around all this kind of stuff. These are the games that go on. No kidding with governments in charge of health. But they did admit that the priority was still going on for vasectomies, abortions, and tubal ligations to do with infertility, because it's a UN mandate that every country's signed onto. However, here's an article here to show you how lucrative it is for the system too, and how they're getting under the EU. Now they're all under this super parliament. They're condemned to a super parliament, and they take dictates from that. Now people from all over Europe can go to Britain for their abortions, paid for by the British taxpayer. And this is from the Mail Online. It says, get a free abortion on the National Health Service. Polish women are advised to travel to Britain for treatment. 16th of March 2010. Polish women are being told to come to Britain for free abortions to avoid strict laws at home. They're being urged to take advantage of cheap flights and hotels as part of a poster campaign which features a semi-naked woman with the words, my choice, written across her stomach. The flyers, which are being distributed by pro-abortion campaigners in Poland, mimic the Mastercraft series of priceless adverts. The lender's campaign features different scenarios such as the first date or trip to the World Cup with various prices alongside. You get a whole package deal here, and the taxpayer is picking up the tab. Polish women are being told to come to Britain for free abortions to avoid the laws at home. They're being urged to take advantage of the cheap flights, blah, blah, blah. The flyers, which are being distributed by pro-abortion campaigners in Poland, say they distribute, this is, it keeps repeating itself, this darn thing. In the Polish ad, the woman has various slogans in her stomachs, translated such as plane ticket to England at special offer, 300 zloty, which is about £70, accommodation 240 zloty, £56, abortion at public clinic, 0 zloty, so it's paid for by the British taxpayer. Thank you very much. Just keep bending over, and bending over. And it's all done through government, with the approval of government, as the country supposedly broke. And to say, if you really want something important, forget it. You'll be dead. You'll be dead. Now, cause and effect. Well, you see, since the 40s and 50s, speeding up through the 60s, with the whole push on to create pre-pubertal sex and then massive teenage sex through the music industry and the movie industry, and promoted from the top down, there was a lot of fallout. But the idea, of course, according to Wells and Huxley and Bertrand Russell, who tried experimental schools along the subject of pre-pubertal sexual intercourse, was to ensure that the children wouldn't bond with any one person. That would put the end to marriage. Remember, that was a priority, an absolute priority. And with the side effects comes the effects. For every action is an equal and opposite reaction. And some people got pregnant. Well, they put all their money into finding the pill, contraception pills, and putting up the money to make sure they got abortions. Until the abortions become normal, and apparently I've heard women actually say that, it's just like getting a wart removed, and that's the value of human life. That's what it sinks down to. And I said, years ago, I said, eventually they'll go for the elderly. And I've read the articles here, even recently, even more of them, where they want to open clinics up for the elderly. If you're just too tired of life, not physically sick, but just too tired of life, you can go to a clinic and get bumped off for free. Well, do you realize where all this goes? This dehumanization of life. Understand what it's all about and where it ends up. Because you see, if you can't respect life and you can't respect each other either. Also, when government wants to kill you off, you'll say, well, why shouldn't they? They've got the right to do it. What are we anyway? You're devaluating yourself as you accept all these things piece by piece by piece. It's psychology. It's understood. Every effect is an equal, every reaction is an equal and opposite reaction. And what you hear today, well, really, it's not my fault. What you'll hear when a boy or a girl end up in trouble, it's not my fault. They've had nothing to do with it. And the government's only too happy through education to say, yeah, it's true, you had nothing to do with it. So you take all responsibility out of their hands. And who takes on responsibility? The state does. The state takes responsibility over life and death. Who gets born, who doesn't? Do you understand what that's all about? This is bigger than someone's right to decide. It's putting power into the hands of people who want to euthanize a good portion of the public. There's far bigger consequences to everything that we do than most folk even realize. Remember, the government wanted to take away the community. They used to help each other out and give you government agencies that now become authorities. All that kind of stuff comes when you allow government to take over. The nanny state, they call it. But then the nanny becomes rather nasty in her old age, and she tells you who can be born and who can't be born. But don't you worry, it wasn't your fault. You had nothing to do with it. I'll be back with more on this topic after this break.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Hi, folks. I am Alan Watt, and this is Cutting Through the Matrix. Just talking about the dehumanization of society and how it's planned that way. The whole idea, I remember Julian Huxley said, we have to dethrone man from his pedestal where he thinks that he's the most supreme being on the planet, the highest creature in the world, and they'd have to get it through our thick skulls that we are now down to the level of animals, and even below, in fact, according to Maurice Strong. He actually said that we would wish we would have the rights of the tree or animals at the Rio Earth Summit meeting. And they're not kidding. But, as I say, you're supposed to keep bowing and bowing to the different cultures. Remember, China, for instance, is the model state for the United Nations to copy for this one child per family policy, which isn't quite true because I read an article not too long ago where the Chinese government will allow you to pay a slight kind of penalty if you're wealthy enough to have a second child, because they do believe in eugenics, so the wealthier ones must be the most successful, therefore they can have more than one child, and they can afford to pay the little penalties that go along with it. But for the rest, no. Social disapproval says, well, you're taking food away from the children to come if you have a second child, so we're going to abort it. And the BBC did a documentary a while back where they showed they were buying fetuses outside the back doors of the abortion clinics for food. Because it's a health food, you see. China, they're crazy on health foods and foods that give them virility. They're fanatic about anything that gives them virility. I can remember years ago a documentary where they showed you about the ivory trade coming out of Africa. And at that time, a lot of rhinoceroses were being destroyed just for the horn, which was scraped into a powder because the Chinese believed it was very potent, you see. And they like to eat their food where it's still jumping around on the table. If you watch the movie or the documentary, the largest Chinese restaurant in the world, you'll see how they prepare the food and the fish are still mouthing away on your plate. And the same thing with other animals as well. Different culture, you see. Different culture altogether. We're supposed to just sit back and say, well, you know, different strokes for different folks. However, it goes worse than that. Remember, China is the model state for the world. But you see, what happens too is a dehumanization process when life becomes so cheap, and they do have mandatory abortion, and they do have a history of killing off especially the females in the families. And that was actually promoted. The UN looked at that, that part of the Chinese tradition, and didn't stop it, and they encouraged it because they wanted to drastically bring down the populations. Now there's far too many males in China compared to women. Big shortage. But here's an article from the Seoul Times in Korea. It's Saturday, March 27th, and it's quite gruesome. And by the way, don't look at this article if you really are very squeamish or you have a conscience at all, because there's graphic photographs in this one. And it's letters to the editor from somewhere in the field, obviously. And they show you human fetuses being boiled and prepared for the kitchen for health food and sexual potency. So some of the Chinese people are known to be eating babies, and the news circulated through the internet or via webmail communication is shocking the world. An email report received by the Seoul Times confirmed that news with several vivid and appalling pictures of human embryos, fetuses being made into a soup for human consumption. The report went on, a town in the southern province of Canton in Guangdong is now on trend, taking baby herbal soup to increase overall health and stamina and the power of sexual performance in particular. They really believe in this stuff. The cost in China currency approximately is $4,000, and it gives you the Korean equivalent. A factory manager was interviewed, and he testified that it is effective because he's a frequent customer. It's a delicacy whereby expensive herbs are added to boil the baby with chicken meat for 8 hours or boiling and steaming. He pointed to his second wife who's next to him. She's 19 years old and he's 62. He claims to have sex every day. After waiting for a couple of weeks, he took the reporter to the restaurant where he was informed by the restaurant manager that the spare rib soup, which is a local code for baby soup, was now available. And then they go on and on and on about it. There's lots of photographs there, and it's not for the squeamish. And, you know, we're supposed to accept all this kind of stuff in our stride, I suppose. But what I'm mentioning this for, you need to understand that we are being dehumanized in the same way, deliberate way, by the way. Because we think nothing of it. And the feminist groups were incredibly funded by the big foundations, by whom? Guys like Rockefeller, who's up there on Google and many other videos talking about the need to drastically reduce the world's population. So he's all for this stuff. All these groups are used, you see. And always get the most radical spokespeople to come out to advocate it. But where does it end up? Cause and effect, remember. Cause and effect, cause and effect. Every action is an equal and opposite reaction. And we're being dehumanized at one incredible speed. Incredible speed. And it will come, because the Optimum Population Trust and all the branches across the world, the guys who advise Prince Charles and all the other biggies, the guys like Christopher Tickle, who's talks about the need to drastically depopulation. You have also Mr. Holdren on Obama's staff right now, who co-authored the book Ecoscience with the other fanatics, talking about mandatory sterilization and so on. One day you might see that on the tables here as well. For you to eat, and you probably won't mind. Back with more after this break.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Hi, folks. This is Alan Watt. We're cutting through the matrix. Just mentioning cause and effects and how when you promote nothing but sex, 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 and you create a culture where if you're over 25, you're over the hill, because no one else really matters in this culture, according to the media and entertainment, but you promote nothing but sex, then there's consequences to all of that. And we don't like to think of that. And meanwhile, Well, you already have women in the Western world having injections into their skin, and there's stem cells from fetuses and creams with aborted fetuses, and they think nothing of it. Well, what's the next step? What's the next? Is it going to be like China? Well, yes, it will become that way, absolutely. And I'll bet you, by the way, it's already happening in the Western world. Guarantee you. Already happening. Going to get the life force out of the very, very young, eh? The old ancient witchcraft stuff, sort of animistic magic, will be transferred from the object to you. Paganism, and it's the extreme. All the way back. Climb up the ladder and then fall down so fast, eh? Happily so, as we gorge ourselves on entertainment, and the children see nothing but sex, sex, sex. That's all they see in much music. That's all it's about, sex. Don't ever get a partner for life, whatever you do. Just have as many as you want. So everyone's disposable. The partners are disposable, and so is the outcome, the child. Cause and effect. Dehumanization. Huxley, remember what he said? CEO of the UNESCO. Old dethroned man from his pedestal. Well, it's happened, folks. Now, another article is interesting. People have heard of the Common Purpose Organization in Britain. I personally think it's an offshoot authorized by the Royal Institute for International Affairs, because they go by the same rules as that organization. But they've infiltrated every part of government and local authorities and even the military. Even though that's illegal, you cannot have a so-called a private charitable organization with an agenda encroaching on people who are presently involved in the military, but they've done it, which tells me it's been authorized from the top. And they also look for young children. They're very interested in young children, very, very interested to get future leaders for the post-democratic society, to train them from youth to rule over us, you see. And he's one of them. He's one of the characters from this organization. The Mail Online children's charity boss admits string of sadistic sex attacks on prostitutes in a torture chamber bedroom. 23rd of March, 2010. Now, I'll put all these links up at the end of the show, remember, at cuttingthroughthematrix.com. If ExploreNet gives me graces me with the speed to get it up there instead of the twice up the dial-up, which is supposed to be high speed. So, children's charity boss has admitted a string of sadistic sex attacks on four prostitutes. Matthew Byrne, 38, made his victims dress up as young schoolgirls before carrying out horrific sex assaults on them in his rural home. Liverpool Crown Court heard the senior charity worker tied up. See, charity workers, you see. Foundations, charities. Tied up, gagged, and strangled his victims for his own sexual pleasure. He then used a cane to repeatedly beat the women who were tied to his bed while he carried out the obscene acts. In another attack, he repeatedly whipped his victim until her blood sprayed over his bedroom walls. He then used a plastic bag to suffocate the woman until she saw black spots in front of her eyes and thought she was going to die. After being released, the woman discovered she had 40 whip marks to her body and legs. The police raided Byrne's home in New Brighton. They discovered he had turned the bedroom into a torture chamber. And then they found a double bed with shackles, leather collars, cane ropes, tapes, and girls' clothing. He also had a collection of violent pornography, while his computer revealed he had accessed a string of sadistic websites. The DNA and blood from Byrne's victims was also uncovered. Byrne, who ran the Young Persons Advisory Service, previously worked with children as young as 10. And say, too, he also worked with Common Cause. Common Purpose. The charity worker changed some of his pleas shortly before his due to stand trial, with 24 charges at Liverpool Crown Court yesterday, and so on, and so on, and so on. But that's the society we now have. And to be honest with you, when you see some of the movies they're churning out, it's almost acceptable. What I'm reading here is acceptable. You understand that? As we're degraded and degraded and degraded. Sadomasochism, the cheapness of life. Pain, punishment, death. And it's called entertainment. Quite something. Now, the North American amalgamation is still going on. The last signatory has been done this year, 2010, supposedly for the complete integration of the Americas. And they hushed it up last year, but they still passed it, went through and signed it. This year's the final one, because in 2005, on Canadian television, they did show the president and two prime ministers signing the first open agreement. I say open agreement. And they said that the last one would be done in 2010. But they're copying Europe, you see. And that was brought up at the 2005 meeting on television, where President Bush was said, this sounds awful like the European Union. And then Bush jumped in and he said, well, what's wrong with that? He says free trade is good for us. And he skipped over all the other stuff that come with free trade, like total amalgamation and massive immigration and all the rest of it. But here's where this new totalitarian regime, remember these organizations that come out when they amalgamate countries are not democratic by any means at all. They're dictatorial powers, and even ex-communists have come out and said the same thing. This article here says, new economic union Gestapo to spy on everyone, and this is from the Sovereign Independent. A new European intelligence agency, Europol, has been handed frightening powers to pry into everyone's lives. This will come to the States too. We've already amalgamated CSIS and the FBI in Canada. The agency of the EU can access information on everyone and anyone, including their political opinions and sexual preferences, if it suspects, rightly or wrongly, that they may be involved in any predatory act which could lead to criminal activity. That covers anything, folks. Because everyone is a possible criminal given the right circumstances, like starvation. I'm sure some will say that calling Europol the Gestapo is unrealistic and over the top, but if you consider that during the reign of the Nazis, they would have to infiltrate social democratic and communist opposition, whereas today the powers that be can sit in an office performing information gathering using phone tapping, email, and internet usage. Are Europol not a worse threat to our freedoms? The vagueness of the Hague-based force, that's UN again, remits sparked furious protests in the UK yesterday, with critics warning that the EU snoopers threaten our right to free speech. It's understood the agency will concentrate on anyone thought xenophobic, that's like fear of other people, other nations, other nationalities, or likely to commit a crime involving the environment, computers or motor vehicles. This could include covert monitoring of people who deny the existence of climate change. No kidding, they will. Or speak out on controversial issues. You know, that's what they did in the Soviet Union. They locked you up in psychiatric hospitals if you didn't go along with any mandate, when reality would change and you somehow had to adapt to the new newspeak. They'd say that you had inflexibility of opinion. That was considered a mental disorder. Paul Nuttall, chairman of the UK Independence Party, said, I'm horrified. We thought Gordon Brown's Big Brother state was bad enough, but at least we are going to kick him out in May. What would be the difference in it? Whoever comes in will be the same. These guys we cannot sack until we leave the EU. James Welsh, leader director of Campaign Group Liberty, said, we have huge concerns that Europol appears to have been given powers to hold very sensitive information and to investigate matters that aren't even crimes in the country. Any extension of police powers at any level needs to be properly debated and scrutinized. Well, fat chance, because you see, there is no debating going on at the EU Parliament. Even the politicians cannot make laws or adjust them or knock them out. It's done by a secretive group at the top. And that's a fact, folks. I've read the articles before. Oh, it's going to be so wonderful, this free trade stuff. That's all it is, you know, this free trade. Boom, you're amalgamated with a super parliament. Now also under National Health Service, which is getting rammed through in the US, to bring in the minimalistic care, minimal care, under the UN's agenda, as we said at the World Health Organization, that every country will have minimal care available to all people. It'll also have a tiered system for the very, very rich and wealthy and those who are very important to society. Your status in society. In Britain, the National Health Service bureaucrats, the number of them, the bureaucrats just dealing with the National Health Service, increases six times as fast as the number of nurses. Too many chiefs, 26th of March 2010. The workforce of bureaucrats in the National Health Service is growing six times as quickly as the number of nurses, according to official figures. while the number of health service managers went up 12% in 1 year, the number of nurses increased by less than 2%, and the number of health visitors plummeted. Since the Labour Party came to power, the number of managers has almost doubled, partly as a result of the need to monitor stringent Whitehall targets on waiting times. So they have all these guys employed to monitor waiting times, like the 5 year. What's your problem? Oh, I've got cancer. Okay, you're 5 years. 5 years, come back in 5 years, son. And then the one next to you, what's wrong with you? Well, I want an abortion. Oh, no problem, come into the clinic tomorrow, 2:30. I'm not kidding, that's what's going on there. You see, it's not health care at all, it's a political agenda. That's what government does. Everything government does is political. You can't mix it with health care. You can't mix it. Now, I read from Jack Satali's book a while back. The first one that he put out was called Millennium, Winners and Losers in the Coming New World Order. And he said that, and he works at the United Nations, remember, and he said the next boat people would be Americans leading their countries, leading the shores for work overseas. And the creme de la creme would be recruited by the leading countries in commerce, and they'd travel off to other countries. I could have new nomadic people that would go from budding countries to budding countries, according to the economies. Well, here's an article here about the U.S., and it's already happening there. It's already been happening in Europe for a long time. In fact, they had the European paper, and this full of ads for the creme de la creme. Everyone else is left behind, of course, and this is from businessweek.com. Business school grads are flocking to Asia for jobs. Exodus of talent from the U.S. may be part of a structural shift in a corporate world. It says James Crawford says he hopes he can capitalize on his Columbia MBA in Shanghai. Special report: for decades, the U.S. manufacturing jobs have been slipping away, even as American factories churn out billions of dollars worth of goods. This is James Tsai, the sort of MBA corporate recruiters covet. He went to a good prep school, earned a degree with honors from Middlebury College, and made vice president in Bank of America's International Wealth Management Group at the age of 26. Today, Tsai is about to graduate, straight A's in hand, from Northwestern's Kellogg School of Management, a top-rated program in America, and he's hustling to land his first post-MBA job in China. Executive class drivers like Tsai used to have just one post-grad career destination, the U.S., but not anymore. I'm doing everything I think I can to get over there, he says. Every era has its version of the MBA dream. In the 80s, it was all about conquering Wall Street and choppering off to the Hamptons. In the late 90s, it saw a stampede to Silicon Valley. In the mid-aughts, the gilded clubby preserve of private equity beckoned. Now the emerging narrative is about steroidal Asia and its promise of growth. At premier institutions such as University of Chicago's Booth School, University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School, and Northwestern's Kellogg, the percentage of MBAs taking jobs in Asia, including U.S. students like Tsai, as well as international students, has more than doubled in the past 5 years, from roughly 5% of the graduating class to more than 10%. There's a sense that the center of gravity is shifting, said Julie Morton, Booth's Associate Dean for Career Services. The number of students taking international jobs usually swells in a recession, says Kellogg Assistant Dean Roxon Horry. But Horry and others believe that the refrain of "Go East, young man" is not a short-term response to U.S. economic downturn, but a structural shift towards an internationalized mobile talent market. That's exactly what Elul called it years ago. A new nomadic class of professionals who will move from up-and-coming countries to up-and-coming countries across the world, but they'll only take the creme de la creme. And all those with bees and so on will all be stuck inside their vastly armed and guarded countries. So that's what's coming. It's already here. Now, we've all heard about nanotechnology. They're very quiet. I've had articles from the Nanotechnology Association to do with food. where they actually disguised it and said they didn't want the public to know. They weren't too happy about it, so they're going about it surreptitiously. But anyway, it's already in the food. And it's from AOL News, AOL. Regulated or not, nano foods are coming to a store near you. This is March 24th. For centuries, it was the cook and heat of the fire that cajoled taste, texture, flavor, and aroma from the pot. Today, that culinary voodoo is being crafted by white-coated scientists toiling in pristine labs, rearranging atoms into chemical particles never before seen. Last year's Institute of Food Technologists and International Conference, nanotechnology was a topic that generated the most buzz amongst the 14,000 food scientists, chefs, and manufacturers crammed into an Anaheim, California hall. Though it's a word that's probably never been printed on any menu, and probably never will, there was so much interest in the potential uses of nanotechnology for food that a separate day-long session focused just on that subject was packed to the overflowing. In one corner of the convention center, a chemist, a flavorist, and two food marketing specialists clustered around a large chart of the periodic table of elements. So you have to think back to your high school class, science. The food chemist from China ran her hands over the chart, pausing at different chemicals just long enough to see how a nanoized version of each would improve existing flavors or create new ones. One of the marketing guys questioned what would happen if the consumer found out. The flavorist asked whether the Food and Drug Administration would even allow nano ingredients. Posed a variation of the latter question, Dr. Jesse Goodman, the agency's chief scientist and deputy commissioner for science and public health, gave a revealing answer. He said he wasn't involved enough with how the FDA was handling nanomaterials in food to discuss that issue. Well, actually, I'll put another link up too to show you that the FDA aren't even looking into it. They're way behind, and stuff is already being put in your food. So there's two articles I have on that to come up. I'm going to mention Mr. Pachauri, the wonderful guy from India, after this break.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Hi, folks. I'm Alan Watt. We're cutting to the Matrix. And we've all heard of Mr. Pachauri, the guy who writes porno novels at the IPCC. I've read the articles from the mainstream. Well, he's involved in a company, Tata. It's called Tata. They own Jaguar, Land Rover, and Tetley T. And if they get hundreds of millions of pounds in green subsidies to build one of the world's biggest coal-fired power stations, and they're shutting them down in Britain and elsewhere, but they're building them in China, so they're getting subsidies to do this. Tata will receive huge sums from the West for building the power station in India, thanks to the carbon trading system established by the Kyoto Treaty. Critics say the system makes a mockery of attempts to combat climate change. When the plant near Port of Mundra in Gujarat becomes operational in 2011, it'll emit 25.7 tons of carbon dioxide a year, more CO2 than any power station in Britain, yet it'll be classed by the United Nations as a source of clean power. That means Tata will be able to sell surplus carbon credits established under the Kyoto Treaty to firms in the West. Energy groups will be able to buy the credits as an alternative to reducing CO2 emissions. But you think of Mr. Pachauri because, you see, he's also involved as CEO of a subsidiary of Tata. They're all in it together. They're all filling their pockets with the laws that they themselves push through. All these psychopaths are doing very well for themselves, mind you, under this con game of carbon credits. Now, briefly, I'll go to, I think it's Kevin in North Bay.
Yep, that's me.
How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing all right. Just about graduating radio school. I'm almost done here. And, you know, one thing I want to ask you, Alan, what do you think is probably one of the best solutions to really fight off this New World Order system?
Well, that's a question we should have been asking 50 years ago.
It's
taken years of secret negotiations between governments, ever since the United Nations was set up, in fact, with many departments attached to it, all to bring in this New World Order. The Overseas Economic Departments for Investment, all these companies working together, private organizations.
what do you think of Max Egan's idea of non-compliance on a mass scale? You know, very quickly before the show ends, you know, this whole New World Order system, it thrives on people paying the price for their own slavery through the tax system and through the money system.
Yeah.
And I think that if you stop feeding the beast, you kill it, you know?
Yeah. The problem is we've never, ever had enough of the public getting together and going along. You'll always find the majority of them don't want to stand up above the trenches and get their heads seen. They'd rather go along and mind you, they'll take the benefits of a small minority do it and suffer and win. But the majority will still go along. And again, we have a class system where the more wealth to do will not join in. They're okay with their jobs. They'll go along to their jobs. And everyone else will stay off work. But I know the idea. Technically, we have the ability, absolutely, to stop things in their track by non-compliance.
Yeah, and I think I do think that a massive boycott, while the internet is still running strong, I think that'd be the best means to do it, and I think it can be done. You'd be surprised how many people really are awake out there.
They're awake, but they put a need. It's a philosophy, a common philosophy, and where they would take it after they'd won. None of that exists right now. You see, that's a problem.
Well, I hear the music, and just to let you know, Gandhi did it, and I think it can be done again.
It certainly can be done, but it's up to us, but generally when our backs are against the wall, unfortunately. From myself in Hamish in Ontario, Canada, it's good night, and may your God or your God's go with